With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.
Friday morning is our political panel morning here at RCR. Always looking forward to this time in the week, I have to say. I want to welcome Olivia Pearson. Hi, Olivia.
Oh, good morning, fellas. Paul, Cam and Will.
Yeah, fellas. That's right.
Fellas.
Cam Slater, welcome back.
Good morning. Welcome, everybody.
And William McGibsey is joining us again. Hi, Will.
G'day. Thanks for having me.
At quite short notice, I would have to say. A couple of weeks ago, he was with us for the first time. How do we describe you again? I think you've updated the handle.
Well, look, I mean, I'm public policy expert and free speech advocate,
right.
But also now the coordinator of the Conservative Network.
Okay. Well, that sounds good. That's a good one.
Coordinator. Yeah, well, I hope so.
Yeah, all right. Okay, so we're here to talk about what's been happening the last week in politics. And as always, plenty of subject matter. Target rich. Are we starting? Where are we starting? Are we starting here? Are we starting overseas? TDS setting in big time now, of course. He's the nominee.
TDS is on steroids now that Trump's won the nomination. And I noticed that I came across this article from News Hub. They reposted a shabby little story from CNN about a new book by Jim Sciotto, who is an anchor for CNN Newsroom.
An anchor? Ooh.
Yes. Ooh.
Stand back. I'm an anchor.
Yeah. This may have something to do with why News Hub has gone broke. They published scurrilous CNN propaganda about what Trump may or may not have said, according to people who Trump fired, like Bolton and ex-chief of staff John Kelly. The headline reads, Donald Trump reportedly praised Adolf Hitler, said he did some good things. The article then goes on into all the nice or diplomatic things he said about other so-called dictators, well, real dictators like President Xi, Kim Jong-un, Viktor Orban of Hungary. I'm not sure he qualifies.
I think he's cool. I go along with him on Viktor.
Yeah, I think he's quite a beloved president, not some radical dictator. And, of course, Vladimir Putin of the Russian Federation. Honestly, we're now watching America succumb to truly dictatorial measures dished out by the Biden administration. And I've never seen such an unacceptable and unaccountable administration, and one with a demented puppet as its carefully controlled figurehead. And all these people can do is keep harping about Trump said this, Trump said that back in 2018.
Allegedly said it.
Yeah. And what about what Biden has actually done? You know, such as allowing 15 million illegal aliens. No one really knows that figure.
Not allowed to call them illegal.
Yeah, newcomers.
What about the 350,000 he illegally flew into the country? Yeah, that's something like 3,500 flights of a 737.
Yeah, some airline operators making good money out of that.
And they do that because they want new demographic voting bloc, right? So, really, they
rigged election, rigged election all the way along.
Gotta be right.
Again.
They assiduously protest that when Trump said the election is rigged, they assiduously protest and said it's not rigged, we're not rigging it. But for a long time now, a long time before Trump came along, there was a big problem with media bias and a big problem with immigration. So if you're systematically misleading the public or slanting the coverage in the media, then that's going to have a big effect on democracy and how people vote.
Is the impact of Google as well?
They tried
Facebook?
It here. Media tried it here. Didn't work.
That's right. And then along with the illegal immigration, which is basically replacing the constituency of voters who don't vote for you with new ones, they have been rigging the election all along. But now we see they're actually going after the candidate, a legitimate presidential candidate, trying to imprison him, bringing all sorts of bogus charges against them. And if that's not trying to rig an election, then what is?
Then what is? So Mike Johnson, the Republican Speaker of the House, was saying the other night to Jesse Waters that he can't get a proper meeting with Biden to discuss anything when the meeting gets organized and an entourage gathers instead so that Biden doesn't have to speak.
But yeah, so who's running the show, right?
Well, even when asked about, you know, does he, even this is Mike Johnson, when he's asked about does he think if whether Biden is fit enough to serve as president, although he says no, he quickly follows it up with, I'm not being mean or disrespectful or anything. It's actually sad. This is the prevailing narrative about Biden's obvious Alzheimer's. The opposition trying to be seen to be polite and civil as their country gets messed with so badly. And I want to say there is nothing sad about Biden being in office with dementia. Nothing. He's a dirty old man diseased with sexual perversion who used to take showers with his 15-year-old daughter. This is not sad. It's evil. And it's a carefully managed pantomime to cover all the things that, if they're lucky, they think their enemies will pass off as incompetence. But it's not incompetence. It's corruption and wickedness. And this is the plot that the Democratic elites came up with in order to steal the last election and obviously to steal this coming one. So I'm sick of...
That assumes, Olivia, though, he'll make it to November.
Who, Biden?
Biden. I mean, I know. Clearly it's possible that, well, he might make it, but he might be in a vegetative state, you know, literally.
Well, whatever drugs they put him on to do the so-to speech the plan the B? Other day.
What's the plan B?
I have no idea what their plan B is.
Well, let's speculate. Cam, what would a plan B be? Big Mike?
No. It won't be Michelle Obama, no.
No, I mean, it's
Newsom?
It's fanciful
She's
stuff.
Too hated.
But
can't be Kamala Harris. She is so unpopular.
Well, I mean, so
if you're rigging
Biden.
It, does it matter?
But so is Biden. He's the most unpopular president since World War II.
Yeah.
Right?
He's got the nomination.
I know. But that's the deluded thinking of the Democrats. Remember, this is a party that has tried to impeach the president twice, both on spurious made-up evidence, when they were actually doing the things that they accused Trump of doing. Right? Biden was actually doing the things that they accused Trump of doing in the Ukraine. They've manufactured evidence for the January 6th, so-called January 6th inquiry, where they've suppressed evidence that exonerates Trump, right? The claims that he reached across to grab the steering wheel of his limousine, which is this massive vehicle, like you can't actually get at the driver.
Long,
you can't actually get at the driver, right? You just can't.
Yeah, and, it's got a bulletproof screen between you and the driver.
And the driver has repeatedly said that didn't happen. Secret Service people said it didn't happen. So there's this narrative that the media, and they're complicit in all of this, they're donkey deep.
The problem with some of this stuff, these stories like this, though, even if it did happen, it just makes Trump seem cooler. he's grabbing the steering
wheel.
The Secret Service agent.
Well, they said to him, we're going to take you to the White House. He says, don't worry about it. There's no problem with security. Those are my people there.
But, I mean, nobody should be talking about what Trump said to some dissatisfied staffer back in 2019. It's irrelevant. And we have the example of him being an excellent and strong president with everything, and I mean everything, including Fauci, stacked against him. So, you know, News Hub publishing this stupid story only makes me go, no wonder you're all losing your jobs. Because Trump's not president right now.
Maybe what they think is if we can get enough clickbait in, we can sort of pump the audience. And the management might notice, and it might save a few.
It's not going to pump the audience.
Low-hanging
fruit. The audience walked a long time ago. They've jimmied the stats. They're now surveying everyone who was in the room, including the cat and the goldfish, and telling that to advertisers that they've got an audience that's stable, and it's not. It demonstrably isn't. And the advertisers know this. They've got algorithms, they've got information that tells them if they run this ad at this time, they should get this much return in their call centers. It's not happening. And, you know, they've been misleading everybody. Same with TVNZ. It's the same ratings company that they both use. So they've been telling everybody that there's still, half a million pensioners sitting there watching the 6 o'clock news. It's just not true.
Wanting fitness machines.
Yeah, it's not happening. So they've
Back
lied.
To Trump. Back to Trump. Don't know about you. But Trump, Assange, just the small matter of Assange and just the small matter of Operation Warp Speed for Trump.
Well, for me, Assange is a non-issue. Like, that guy killed people. He killed people. He released information that allowed people to be killed.
Do you mean killed in the battlefield during the Iraq War?
No, Assange released information that revealed who spies were who were working for allies, including the United Kingdom, Canada, United States, all of those. He revealed information that allowed them to be identified, and people died because of Assange. So
according to who?
I don't have any truck with Assange. He's not this freedom fighter guy that everybody should be.
Oh, well. Everyone's entitled.
I do. I do worry a little bit about the precedent it sets for journalism, though. I mean, journalists often receive information. They cultivate sources, and then they receive information from those sources. And
usually,
they
protect their sources too.
Yes, but if you're punishing someone for merely publishing secret information, that's really punishing them for journalism. And maybe it was irresponsible journalism, but do we really want to be punishing people for that? I think that's a serious,
here's my
thing to consider.
Here's my ruler that I measure this against. The same people who are supporting Julian Assange support Nikki Haga. So this is a guy who never goes to the other side of the story. He just writes stuff. He doesn't actually partake in journalism. He partakes in hit jobs. And so,
yeah, but he's a different person, right?
Yeah, but Assange did. I mean, they may similarly support both men, Cam, but one actually did do uncover some incredible stories, and the other one's just a joke.
And if you're in that business and you collateral damage, well, you know, you shouldn't have signed up.
And also,
how long's the poor guy been in jail for now?
Yeah, and Tommy Robinson, remember when he got put in prison?
4 years now, but then it was
Assange and said that it was the saddest thing he'd ever seen. He was just sitting there broken with flies buzzing around his head, unshowered. And I mean, they really made an example of him. And it's time to, they are torturing him. And I just let him alone now.
So that's one thing against Trump, but he unleashed the monster of the vaccine. He did.
He did. There's no getting around that.
Sorry.
Everybody who was in power at the time would have done the same thing.
The same thing.
It's not justifying it.
Don't care.
No.
If you're going to say you're a genius, then be one.
No. The point I'm making is this, right? Everyone thinks, Jacinda Ardern in New Zealand was terrible because of what she did. I can assure you that if Bill English had won that election and been in the same seat, he would have made exactly the same decisions. The problem is the system. Right, because ministers don't know anything, pretty much.
They're mostly, if they make a mistake, you can't recover from it, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, but they can't admit a mistake because they're so invested in it.
I knew he was doing the wrong thing as he was doing it?
Well,
maybe they should have come to me and I could have saved a whole lot of lives.
Because I knew it was the wrong thing too.
So did
but I also knew that Trump was so proud of his right to try bill, which was allowing drugs that had never been tested to be used on dying people because they've got no other option and they are desperate to actually try to get something to save their life.
So it came on the back of that. He sold it. His personal endorsement and the way he sold it. Big time.
Yeah, it did. But Trump is not a doctor or a medical person, is he? Or a scientist?
They rely on their experts. And if the experts are the ones lying to you, the available evidence that you've got is all lies. You can only make a decision based on what they've given you. We all know Pfizer lied about everything, right?
None of us knew about gain of function going on and all that and Fauci being in part of that.
Sorry, but he's a business genius. He knows it all. I'm afraid he fell over. He failed there.
I'll stop it all. Well, I can see you playing devil's advocate there.
No, I actually was very disappointed.
Although he did create the, he gave the Pfizer and the other vaccine manufacturers a big contract.
The problem is not the vaccine. It's the fact it was mandated. That's the problem.
That's right. But he made some very good comments about not mandating it to people, allowing people to opt out and things like this.
No, so, Trump always says and said from the beginning that it was not to be mandated and he never would have done that. And I believe that.
I'm going to put a poison out there, but it's optional. But I'm going to promote it and try and convince you to take it.
How is that different from right to try? How is that different, Paul, than a drug from right to try that you are now, you're a sick person dying?
A right to try assumes that you're a sick person, wait on, dying, and you're in a very, in a situation where there are very low number of options. We're talking about generally healthy people.
But you watched them panic. We all did. And they wanted that back. They really wanted that back.
He oversold it and he's He can't recover from that, in my
opinion. No, it wasn't him that oversold it. It wasn't him. It was the manufacturers that oversold it, and Trump allowed it through being a president and
not
still
taking credit
man
for
of
it.
Science, but he never mandated. I know he will, but that's because this
I
is
I agree
where
with Alex
just,
Jones. Shut up about it.
No, but I know, but this is where it's almost funny. Do you remember when the vaccine came out and all the Democrats, including Kamala Harris,
yeah,
were on
they
record
wouldn't take
saying,
it because it was a Trump
I will
vaccine.
Never take that because, it, yeah, well, they are the people who not only took it, but also got boosted, but also mandated it.
Yeah, no,
what,
I know that
how
too.
How ironic.
What I'm saying is he kind of failed. He's not so much the rock
star. No, he didn't fail on that, and it's a mistake to let Robert RFK make those arguments during this election. Don't do that work for them, you know. Trump's going to have to answer.
Seems to be
that.
What I think, but anyway, okay. So we're on to Canada now. It's dark times in Canada. Jordan Peterson was right. You know, when the pronouns thing came in, it was the thin end of the wedge. Now full hate speech on the way. C63. C93 was a radio station.
C63.
Canadian Trust author you. Margaret Atwood says she believes this bill is so concerning that she has even compared it to George Orwell's dystopian 84 novel and describes it, I don't know how to pronounce the French, but you know those letters that the French kings used to write?
Yeah, the
could be used as a decree or an order in any situation, no matter what.
Yeah,
writing
well, it's
law.
About time these people came out and, like the radical feminists came out and actually took a swipe at Trudeau, considering what, has she only just noticed that he acts like a dictator now? But you know, she's right to come out, and she said that she has often been the frequent target of hate speech, online vilification, lies, threats, and doxing, and is no fan of that kind of behavior. But in an email exchange with The Globe, she said that she's also no fan of unsupervised authority acting under vague laws without any oversight. We all know that Trudeau and had his political twin here in the name of Jacinda Ardern, who tried to spring a very similar thing down on us and actually succeeded somewhat with the Christchurch call, but the hate speech laws were held down, so we never got them. And Atwood rightly said the possibilities for revenge, false accusations and thought crime stuff are so inviting. And isn't that true?
Of course it is.
Yeah, and can you imagine what a little little fascist ponce like Trudeau would do to the Canadian truckers and other dissidents?
Well, he already done.
You don't need to imagine. Yeah. He did it.
Yeah. But if this was made law?
Being a free speech advocate for myself, I'm opposed to this legislation, but I'm also a political Machiavellian, and I'm thinking, wouldn't it be awesome if we did have actually some legislation like this? And then the very people who pushed it and wanted it, you could turn the tables of the legislation on them, and they'd go, well, this isn't what was intended. And yeah, tough. Should have thought about that. You know, a good example would be the Green Party.
Yeah, they would get away with it, probably.
A good one would be the Green Party with their River to the Sea chants and things like that. That's hate speech. So you could actually turn it on them if they did something like that here. I would be
That's true, because, I mean, hate speech is inherently subjective, isn't it? So you could just...
Exactly.
You could ban the other side of the argument and call that hate speech as well. But I think a lot of the problem here we're having is a lot of Western governments have got themselves into a downward spiral where they're losing legitimacy, they're losing popular support, and their response to this is to crack down on the people criticising them and try and ban them from criticising them, which, of course... if you only do it a half-assed job of it, you're just going to make yourself more illegitimate in their eyes. So it's we're in a tailspin. We're going down and down, and trust and legitimacy of Western institutions, including the media, including the public sector, including academia and other institutions, is just going down and down.
What happens if you're a government? You've been traditionally relied on the media, cooperative media, to kind of promote you, even as people are getting more and more grumpy, and suddenly they've gone. What do you do then? Then you would want to have something more controlling, wouldn't you? Because your little lever of the media kind of doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, it's always best to control people without them really knowing it, if you can. And so softly influencing the way the media covers things is obviously preferable.
Empathy.
But yeah, what we're bringing in now is harder and harder attempts at controlling speech. So you've got hate speech, you've got this idea of mis and disinformation that we have to regulate, we've got conspiracy theories we have to try and shut down. And this, the idea that's floating under the surface there is this idea of harmful information. In fact, one of the things they talk about is malinformation, which is information that is true but nevertheless harmful. So
you can tell because it glows green, right? And it makes this wonk, wonk, wonk.
Or bright pink, like Susie Wiles's hair.
Yeah, right. Radioactive, right?
Yeah, but Cam, they've got a new term now, don't they? That Dolder keeps trying to coin.
Yes, and in fact, there's an article about that. Which is on our list of things to talk about.
We can jump to it any time.
Yeah, Mark Dolder's come out with this alarming report that says that Kiwis are being constantly accosted with misinformation and I'm just trying to get the new term up.
He called it harmful, incorrect information.
Yes. Ooh,
harmful, incorrect what? Information.
But, I mean, you could put really something bad. Up saying, I'm going to surf on the top of a car. That would be harmful, incorrect information, right? but most normal people look at that and go, well, that's stupid. So the headline on Newsroom is 1 in 71 New Zealand social media posts is misinformation.
That's not many.
I know, so?
Like, so what? But it's worse than that, right?
So the chances are I'll miss it altogether.
How do you like this, though? The survey... that these Wombles have created. They're from the University of Auckland's Hate and Extremism Insights Aotearoa group.
Do you think they have a sign on the corridor saying that?
Right. So they've said out of 3.9 million social media posts from New Zealanders across a range of platforms in 2023, around 1.4% were classified by an independent research team as harmful, incorrect information.
Independent research team, who were they?
Yeah, just imagine the room full of them.
1.4% is pretty low, really, isn't it?
It's pathetic.
They must have had to wade through a whole lot of boring stuff to get to that.
Yeah, the researchers were surprised by the relatively low percent. You know what needs to happen? The ministers that are responsible for commissioning these, and it was commissioned out of the Department of the Prime Minister and Cabinet.
Oh.
Right? They need to say, well, it's only 1.4%. It's 3/5 or 5/8 of stuff all. We can get rid of the disinformation project. We can get rid of this group that are in the DPMC. We don't need to commission any more studies. I imagine it costs millions of dollars to do it. Just cancel it. It's not an issue. Here's your data.
It's never been any time in history in any medium, though, that like all the information has been true. I mean,
of course not. That's what propaganda is.
People have always lied, and people have always promoted information that wasn't right or that could be harmful if it was taken and acted on.
Well, look
this isn't a new thing. But
the Allies fooled the Germans for D-Day,
Yeah, the question is how we deal with it. Is the best way of dealing with incorrect information for the government to shut everything down, or is it for just the people to have the discussion and hopefully the truth emerges?
1.4% is higher than our death rate from COVID, much higher.
Yeah.
But it was 0.2. So, I mean, you think about the amount of propaganda we got over people dying here and how many were going to die, and it just didn't happen. It didn't happen.
And how do we know these people are independent?
They're not.
It's easy to say.
It's probably Paula Penfold.
And this is one of the scary things. If you look at the briefings that the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet have been putting up, they are explicitly talking about setting up an all-of-society approach to fighting mis and disinformation.
That means no.
And that involves funding groups that are at arm's length from the government. Explicitly, so it doesn't look like the government's setting up a
money laundering
control system. Yeah, and that's exactly what they're doing.
They control the money. So,
but it's like you see periodically, usually every week, some fool is complaining that the bank let them spend $400,000 on some sort of Nigerian scam or some other type of scam, and they're going, well, the bank should have stopped me. Well, hang on a second. You went and demanded the bank make these payments, that it was all legit, and thumped the table and everything else. And it was an intelligence test, and you failed. And that's the penalty for it. for your stupidity. I mean, you get these text messages coming in on your phone. It says, oh, your package is waiting. If you just pay $10, it'll be delivered. Hang on, I haven't ordered anything, says a sane person, right? A stupid person goes, well, it might be a package. Oh. And then they click on the link.
And the link's always obviously a fraudulent link because it has no match to any known company or anything like that.
Yeah, you know, so you can't protect everybody. You can't wrap everybody up in bubble wrap and protect them from their own stupidity.
But people want to be wrapped up. That's why a lot of people don't challenge what we're challenging here. They're quite happy to accept
that's
it.
That's true, Paul.
They want to be bubble wrapped.
They want to be wrapped in cotton wool. Can I just say something about Dolder, though, since we're on his silly article? He's the absolute epitome of the NPC Wojak meme. For, non-player character groupthink, isn't he? The one with glasses shrieking angrily with red eyes, that is Dolder.
And clutching pearls. He's a pearl clutcher.
Yeah, he is. That digital meme is the equivalent of Mark Dolder's spirit animal, since I don't think he's quite alive enough to have a real one.
Okay. So really, those numbers, not really a problem, is it?
It's not a problem.
Hardly likely to bang into anything that's Miss Mal. What was the new long-winded one he'd come up with?
Harmful incorrect information.
Harmful incorrect information.
It's clunky right there.
Can you just imagine Kate
Hannah? Justin Trudeau will love it.
Can you just imagine Kate Hannah and Sanjana, mad as a hatter, sitting there wondering, well, why have we been washing our hands if it's so small? They famously said five times a day because of what they're seeing online.
The grift is on, man. The grift is on. You can't let it get in the way. It reminds me of a guy I used to know in Tauranga once. He described I asked him, what's the weather like out there? And he said, fine driving drizzle. It's sort of like that. That description's kind of like that.
That's less clunky.
If you ask an Aucklander what the weather is, he said, well, what do you want it to be? If you just wait half an hour, it'll be different.
Okay. Golriz has been in court, and did she have some heavies with her?
Yeah, she had some heavies, bodyguards,
with a torch.
Yeah, with a torch she was shining.
Yeah, what was the torch about?
Well, when you shine a torch into a sophisticated camera. Media camera,
it blows out the picture.
It whites it out, because they're set up for... I've done interviews, they always hold up a white piece of paper. The cameraman goes, yeah, okay, cool, I've got that dialed in. And then away you
go. That's your white balance, yeah.
Yeah. So shining a light in it stuffs that up. And it made it look like she's not contrite at all. It made it look like she's,
She looked like a mafia hustler.
Just trying to brazen her way through it. But what's interesting, and only News Talk ZB from the mainstream media has picked this up, is that the judge that she was appearing in front of changed the time, normally sits at the Waitakere District Court, suddenly appears at Auckland District Court, changed the time by 7 days, accepts the guilty plea, suppresses some information about location and in a mental health report, leaves everyone none the wiser, but what doesn't enter a conviction, even though she's pled guilty. Now, the interesting thing here is the judge has worked on several cases with Golriz Garaman when she was in private practice.
So they know each other. Mm-hmm.
That's a friendly judge, isn't it?
Yeah. It smells bad. It looks bad. And it is bad.
It's not Judge Glubb, is it?
No.
Aren't we supposed to have a Lindsay system where you declare conflict of interest and you try and manage grub.
Them? Sorry, well, go again.
I just said, aren't we supposed to have some sort of system where you declare conflicts of interest like that and remove yourself from them?
Well, if it wasn't for Philip Crump at News Talk ZB, there wouldn't be any questions in the mainstream media about the conflicts of the prior working relationship with the judge. I mean, he's picked it up. He's seen the evidence of it, and he's written about it. He's the only person, and the rest of the media don't want to upset their pals in the Green Party. That's what it looks like to me.
It's terribly awkward, though, isn't it? This whole thing.
Golriz did was shockingly wrong, And
she's a lawyer and a lawmaker.
Exactly.
And she was pinching high-end stuff. She wasn't nicking trackies from Kmart, was she?
No, yeah. Thievery is a low-down, dirty act, and she did it with abandon and skill.
It's a multi-billion dollar problem in New Zealand retail, people pinching stuff.
Yeah,
and so if she gets a slap on the wrist with a wet bus ticket, a thoroughly soaked wet bus ticket, what does that send to everybody else out
there?
Well,
it looks like that could happen, mate.
Oh, it probably will.
But, you know, look what the guy, the granny basher.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that was a white or wet bus ticket, if ever I saw that.
Well soaked in Liberal tears.
Yeah. So we can't really, so there's a there's a system of preference now in our judiciary.
Two-tier justice system.
Yeah. Mm.
Right through the Western world.
I imagine we're going to hear about how she's got some sort of hidden trauma from her past, you know.
But doesn't 160K a year fix that?
Well, it didn't seem to stop her when she was protesting. Had no problems with that when she was protesting, passing laws, standing on the steps of Parliament.
The most unbelievable thing was when they tried to portray it as due to stress. When I'm stressed, I don't go and shoplift, and I'm not sure how many people really do.
You probably don't bash your missus either.
No.
What do you mean probably? I'd say almost certainly. But
certainly, right? This is the excuse that's trotted out, mental health. Neurodiverse.
But some people are buying it, though.
It's just bollocks.
I just, you know, ethically and morally, the world is so upside down at the moment with regards to how the system gets rolled out on us. And, I mean, that's not news to anybody here or to our audience as well. But just getting back, if I may, if you don't mind, just because I wanted to say this regarding Margaret Atwood, the feminist, coming out about the hate speech bill in Canada. Mm. Because, you know, Goldritz has always been a radical feminist also, and she is surprisingly kind to Muslim atrocities on women and that kind of thing. And Atwood's book, The Handmaid's Tale, was published in 1985. So before the Western world had a Muslim problem, right, through immigration. And she described a dystopian future where a Christian theocracy has to overtake in America, now called Gilead, while people seeking asylum, trying to flee Gilead, make it into Canada. That's what the story's about. It was a huge and massive hit against Christianity at the time, which, you know, this impending Christian theocracy, which is always breathing down our necks and has never eventuated, not since, you know, the time of Salem witch hunts and stuff like that.
Because Christians are fighting each other all the time.
But when I watched it, the remake, which is actually a pretty good remake, I remember thinking, why don't you just make a TV series about life in an Islamic country? Because that would reflect pretty accurately what life in Gilead.
I mean, it's already happening. It's playing out right
now. Yeah, and it's not fictional. It's real.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't need to invent some mythical Christian theocracy to write that story. You know, women in clothing that hides the female form and physical punishment for disobedience, like cutting off a finger or gouging out an eye. These are all part of the whole thing. And this, you know, there's been this, and that's 50 years of feminism. 50 years, and these people finally wake up now to go, wow, the left is actually quite authoritarian. I don't understand that blank out that they've done for so, so long.
Yeah. A lot of it is class conflict. So, you know, if you're part of the left-wing champagne socialist classes, and what you want to do is you want to look down your nose at the more rural, the more provincial, the more working class people, and you view the immigrants, including the Muslims, as your nice little allies that you can use against those working people. So I think that's a lot of it. It's probably not all of it, but a lot of it is just a sort of.
It's all about creating divisions in society, isn't it, William? Creating these divisions so you get all of these groups fighting against each other, and then you can control them all because they're too busy fighting each other.
Well, yeah, that's the strategy the British used in many of their colonies when they ruled it. And it would be nice if we didn't have to be ruled over in the same system in our own countries, but that's
maybe we default
manage the emerging multicultural country that we're living in.
Maybe we default to that in the end.
the Brits were actually ruling over countries like India that did have chronic divisions where people wanted, you know,
so there's Chinese, a caste system.
Sikhs, Muslims, you know, Hindus. I'm not sure that they particularly exploited those things. They actually, I mean, they were sticklers for putting British law in place where there was one law for all, no matter what.
But if you're an occupying colonial power, you need to be needed. And what you can offer is you can be the bringer of peace. You know, you can be the...
That's what happened here.
Well, they did that. I mean,
in order to be needed to enforce the peace, you need to have conflict in the first place, right? So that was the colonial strategy in some places, was to stir up conflict between the competing tribes so that you could then step in and be needed as the peacemaker.
And in India, it nearly came undone because there was the Indian Mutiny where their own sepoy troops and that rebelled against the British government. And that led to a whole lot of changes after that was put down, ostensibly with the help of with the Gurkhas, who were brought in to help suppress some of those ones that were revolting. But it was really interesting because at that point in time, in the 1850s, the UK or Great Britain had moved on from having muskets to having rifles, right? And they had all of their troops, issued with patent 53 rifles. And then they realized, well, hang on, we're giving these guys stuff that they can kill us with. So then they brought in this doctrine that said only the British troops can have the latest thing. All of the native, and they called them native troops, there's stamps on Martini Henry's that say NEP, NSNEP, which means Native State Nepal. But they only allowed the native states who were under the control of the British Army to have one generation of firearms behind what the European troops had. So makes when Martini sense. Henrys were being issued to the British troops, they were allowing the Indian troops to have Sniders. So they had a decreased rate of fire. And the other thing the British did is they took all of the rifles that they had and they smoothbored them. And I've got mates who have got Indian rifles that were smoothbored in India as collectible items. But that's the sort of thing that the British did.
Does that mean that the spiral thingy is taken?
Yeah, the rifling was taken out, which made them inaccurate, right?
Okay. Gee.
And they were even more devious than that. Is no two.
Wait, there's more.
No two small smoothbored rifles are the same caliber.
Oh wow! Okay.
Right. So they issued with them with the same ammunition. But it would just rattle down the barrel, right? So what William said is right.
Ended up with one of those.
Militarily, that's exactly what the British did. They made sure that their native states were ill-equipped and that they were better equipped.
Well, it makes perfect sense if you're running an empire.
Yeah,
if you're a minority, you need to maintain technological superiority in order to protect your states.
Dead right.
All right, TVNZ job cuts. Etu Union argues against change proposals, criticises complete lack of a positive vision from the Herald. I think, okay, what's that all about? I go down and it's the River of Filth guy.
Yeah. It's Little Sorry. Napoleon.
Your
Little
Napoleon. Person.
Oh, my golly. They certainly
Napoleon
are not reading
up
the
in
room.
The Union. And then
didn't take sitting, long, did it?
He's sitting there saying, we need to, the TVNZ doesn't have a positive vision. Positive vision for a union is pre-Soviet or Soviet era Gdansk shipyard. That's a positive vision.
Well, they hired him. They can't have a very positive.
But what's interesting about this, though, I've got some little snippets that are leaking out of the government. When the incoming government came in, I understand that in the briefing papers regarding TVNZ, there wasn't a single mention about impending job cuts at all to the minister.
So how long ago was that? Just a few months, really?
Yeah, and so all of a sudden it all starts leaking out and you wonder, oh, hang on a second. There's a little Napoleon sitting in there, Michael Wood.
Oh, he was there. Yeah.
And in the union doing the TVNZ stuff and all of a sudden we get some leaks. So maybe he's party to all of that.
Has he been sitting on... Has he been storing confidential papers in his garage?
I don't know about that, but there's some curious coincidences, and I'm sure it'll all come out in the wash.
They're flapping around, aren't they? Desperately trying to find something that
relevance, like trying to find relevance,
a life buoy or something. Irrelevance. Yeah.
I mean, you look at it; they've got the same constraints that News Hub have got, and they come up with 68 people that are getting gassed. And then the programs that they're getting rid of are actually the profitable ones. So you start.
So how does that work then? Any theories on that?
That doesn't make sense. It's a shakedown. They're getting rid of the profitable ones because, well, it's not that they're profitable. It's that they're well-liked, they're iconic shows, and they want the public to object so they can get more money out of the government.
Oh, okay.
When a company becomes a monopoly, normally, as TVNZ will become if News Hub does go bust, we don't know exactly what's going to happen there. Someone else might buy it or do something. But when a company becomes a monopoly, normally that's normally a boon to them. You know, you've got no competition.
It's the only place you can advertise.
All the eyeballs that were going somewhere else now go to you. The advertisers can put all their money into one place. It should be a good thing for TVNZ. So there's really no call to be giving them more money until we see how this shakes out with their new near monopoly position.
But so if you look at Fair Go's a bargaining chip, is it?
Well, it's not just Fair Go, it's the political shows as well. So it's almost spiteful.
Okay, so what political shows? I've purposely Sunday, not paid attention because I don't care.
Q&A, yeah.
Q&A and Sunday. Well,
was that worth anything anyway?
Well, no. It's worth something to the politicians.
Did I miss it? No, not really.
No, it's worth something to the politicians. And so that's why I say it's almost spiteful. It's, oh, well, if you're not going to give us any more funding.
But that was a New Zealand On Air funded item, wasn't it? Sure it was.
It is, but it's spiteful.
Two identical programs on separate networks. That's great value for money we're getting as a taxpayer.
But yeah, what they're doing is taking away the platform for politicians to speak, right? Just look a bit further into it and
to us.
Well, yeah, they should.
Is it part of the U2 cam?
And then Glenn McConnell can wring his hands and have conniptions that ministers are appearing on our shows.
Shortland Street could go, apparently, or be trimmed back. Would anyone notice that? I mean, who are these people who watch this stuff?
Don't know.
Do they actually exist?
Who watches linear TV anyway?
Well, I don't get it.
Are they
people in old people's homes now? Because that'll end up being who it is.
On the shared TV stuck in the corner.
Yeah, with
at 120 decibels.
Pureed bananas.
I used to work in a beautiful retirement village, and I can honestly say I don't know a single person there out of 300-odd residents that watch Shortland Street. Not one.
Yeah. So it's just jobs for the boys and girls, really, in the end, isn't it? I mean, 800K for the Jacinda movie.
Oh, dear.
What about that?
Now there's a big fluffing thing, isn't it? Fluff, fluff, fluff.
Grift is what it is.
There must be worthy New Zealanders out there.
It's a lot of hip replacements, isn't it?
Well, they're going to be dying to redeem her reputation in this country, considering she needs now an armed a bodyguard with her everywhere.
She should just immigrate. We don't want her here.
Do you think there's any chance they could ever rehabilitate her reputation at this point? I mean, all the attempts to do it just inspire more and more backlash. I think people can see through it.
Mark Hodgson will be grinning because now there's somebody who's hated more than him.
Yeah.
But to spend the money on that movie, when was the last time the New Zealand Film Commission had a hit movie? They might have had one. I don't know.
They probably put money into Power of the Dog, the worst movie ever.
But seriously, if you want to be putting money into movies, at least people got to go and see them and it's got to make a bit of money.
Well, New Zealand films are an unusual cultural phenomenon.
Well, why do we bother then?
There's always been that cinema of discontent here, and they don't know how to write heroic films for this country, and it's been a hole for a long, long time. You know,
it's a make-work scheme for the lovies who support the Labour Party is what it is.
The head of the Film Commission, I think, was a guest at the wedding, wasn't he?
Exactly.
So, okay.
Is that the Alistair?
Yeah, Alistair Carruthers. He was a guest at Jacinda's wedding, and all of a sudden the Film Commission. He's also the chair of TVNZ. How does that work? Just quietly.
That's like a sort of fiefdom or something. How does that work?
Jobs for the boys.
Yeah.
Jobs for the boys.
Now remember, anything that gets funded by New Zealand On Air has to have a commitment to be broadcast, and there are only two entities who can do that:
TVNZ and TV3, and the guy who is on the board of New Zealand On Air is also the chair of TVNZ. The same Mr.
Or is that the Film Commission, or is he all three? Who knows? Yeah, they seem to have taken over, is what I'm thinking. There's like a
but National does this to themselves, right? They never go through the list of all the people who have been appointed in the last 6 years.
Wouldn't that be the first thing you do?
Gone. Because you know Labor does it. I know that Labor does it. I know people who have been on boards that as soon as the Labor government comes in, the next thing that arrives in their letterbox is a letter saying you need to tender your resignation or you'll be dismissed.
Why are they so asleep at the wheel on that one then, Cam? You'd know.
Well, because the National Party is the party of the status quo. They never get out of their own way. They just want to manage the decline a little bit better than what the Labor Party does. That's the National Party. It's their ethos. And they never, ever make changes that are dramatic or drastic. They're just quivering ninnies most of the time.
And one of the very important principles of effective use and maintenance of power is you've got to have your own people in the positions of authority to enact the laws, the rules, the policies that you want to roll out. Otherwise, you can just be sandbagged by the opposition's people who are in those roles, and it just makes it very difficult. Especially when they're controlling, as they do in many of the government ministries, the flow of advice and information that ministers are seeing.
Yep.
It allows them to colour the whole range of options that are presented to ministers for solving problems. They even get to choose what is considered a problem in the first place to a certain extent. So it's an enormous amount of power, and you've got to pay attention and make sure you've got your people who are concerned about things that are important to your voters in those positions.
I mean, you're dead right. And the politics of this for the National Party is always bad because they don't have the courage to line up a chief executive or say, right, you're gone.
Yeah, but Christopher's the big corporate guy in New Zealand. I bet he's fired heaps of people. Like, off you go down the road.
Well, he's been talking to his MPs and trying to set KPIs, and I happen to know one MP told him to go fly a kite.
Oh, so he's corporatizing them.
Mm-hmm.
Thing.
There's a little bit of disquiet in the National Party ranks. It doesn't help when you've told 13 of your ministers that a quarter of them are going to lose their job at the next reshuffle.
That
just means four people are going to start sharpening knives.
When's that then, the next reshuffle?
End of the year.
Okay. All right. Do we have anything more to say about TVNZ job cuts or media related? We're coming up against time. We might be able to go to the landlord story, but anything more to say about media?
Well, I just hope they die fast.
RNZ keeping their head down?
Yeah. State funded. Red Radio, you used to work there.
Yeah. Tell me about
it. You had a red armband and everything, didn't you? You used to sing the Internationale every morning before you started work.
Yeah, there was a bit of that. All right, so should we go to this other story that we've got on the list anyway? Labor claimed 346 landlords own 200-plus properties, but official – again, I'm reading a headline – but official data can prove only one.
This whole story, Paul, is – a travesty, really. And again, National's handing the arguments to the left. You know, you've seen Bryce Edwards and Martin Bradbury and Russell Brown and all the usual screamers on the left talking about this is a tax cut for wealthy landlords, right?
Yeah.
It's not a tax cut. And then the next step they say is that they're going to give this money to landlords. No. They're going to take less from the landlords because it was the only business in New Zealand where the costs of interest were forbidden to be claimed back against against everything else.
So unorthodox in business terms.
Unorthodox in business terms. It was designed, you know, this is the joke of it, right? Labor brought this in, right, as a way of controlling landlords so that house prices and rents would drop. Of course, the opposite happened because these morons never actually have studied economics at anything past secondary school level, and it failed. And so now they're saying they're going to give this to – but again, Luxon's fallen into this. He's saying this is going to look reduce rents. Well, I can assure Christopher Luxon that it won't reduce rents. Rents never go down, ever.
Yeah, good point.
And he's dreaming, and, you know, I'm thinking of running a series. I'll wait till the law's passed and it's in, and then I'll wait a couple of months, give it 6 months. Handily, the Department of Statistics shows us what the average rents are. I'll be able to sit there every month and say, well, when are the rents coming down, Chris? When are the rents coming down, Chris?
Should have kept his mouth shut.
Should have kept his mouth shut. It was just a rebalancing of a business environment for people.
But surely you can argue it so easily that way. Every other business claims that.
I mean,
this is business in the end because of the way the money's spent. So you can't have, you know, preference in that way.
But again,
end of argument.
Yeah, it is a good argument, and it's a sensible argument, but it's one that Christopher Luxon singularly fails to rise to every time. It's like he's got tits for hands.
Wait on.
Okay. Did he really say rents would go down, though, or did he use
he did.
The weasel words? Did he use the weasel words downward pressure on rents?
Oh, that's different.
It won't do anything of the sort. I can assure you, as a landlord myself, that my rents will not be going down for my tenants at all.
So you were actually speaking for you just before. Any potential tenant of yours now knows that you'll never get a break on the
they
rent.
They never go down. When do rents go down? Show me a place where rents go down.
You're right about that.
You're right about that. Yeah, it's part of this. There's been this war on landlords, though, for so long now, hasn't there? And, you know, they're considered to be
greedy capitalist bastards.
Yeah, greedy capitalist pigs. Whereas, you know, I have an excellent landlady. She is so good to us. And
well, that's because they want good people in.
They want good people, but also I've seen her go through, you know, real hassles with very entitled tenants that come in and they demand this, they demand that, heat pumps and extra insulation and
bloody heat pumps,
heaters and all the rest of it. And she'll always give them what they want, but they never appreciate it anyway. And really, you know, she's over 70 now, and this is her retirement plan. And a lot of landlords are in that position. And when you get one that's excellent, it's worth treating them well because they'll be good back to you.
Yeah.
Those healthy home standards, like with putting in the heat pumps and the insulation and everything, that's part of the reason that rents went up under labor.
Yeah, it was part of it. Yeah.
As well intended as it was, if landlords have to pay for all that stuff, of course
they're going
to
recover it.
Yeah, they're going to recover the rent.
I'll tell you what happened when that came in. We had a couple of houses down in Tauranga. It came in, and then the tenants in both our places decided to leave. We don't have any mortgage on the properties. I said, this is fantastic. We've got, you know, the Christmas period to do all of the alterations, you know, put in the heat pumps, do all of those sorts of things. And I just looked at the cost of that, and then I amortized it over 52 weeks and rounded it up to the nearest $10, and that's how much the rent increased for the next tenants coming in.
Cool.
And it will stay that level. It doesn't go back down after a year. Right, when I've got all the money back for the extra cost of putting in the heat pump. But there was Grant Robertson saying, oh, no, we think that landlords won't pass this on. On what planet does this fool live?
Well, he's now the head of, or very soon to be the head of the university. So
there's no money. Yeah. There's no printers there to print money.
Will he inflate grades as successfully as he inflated the currency?
Or his own body.
All right. Okay. I think we're up pretty well against time. We've ranged over quite a few things. It's been entertaining and hopefully informative and all those things. So I want to thank William McGimsey for coming back in. Thank you, Will.
No problem. Pleasure what's to be
that
here.
What's that official title, new title again?
Coordinator at the Conservative Network.
That's the one. Olivia Pearson.
Thanks a lot, Paul.
I expect that your landlord will find out that you've been saying nice things about her, and that will help with the relationship.
Well, I've got all the doors closed, so my neighbours can't hear me at the moment.
Okay, but they'll listen. They might listen.
Which is why I'm so red, because I'm absolutely so hot in here. Goodness me.
This time of the morning. And yeah, Cam Slater. Thank you, Cam.
Thank you, Paul, and thank you for having me on the panel again. Will do.
Do it again next week.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom. Simply visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.